On this week's show, Data Drives Intelligence with Josh Kanner from Oracle. All right, if you're tuning in, you might think you're in a time machine going backwards, because this is not the first time this crew has sat down together. It's the first time in a long time. And we're going to get into it. But Rob McKinney joining me on the mic. We had you at the AGC National. Now I got you here with our boy Josh. This is going to be fun.
Man, it is good to see both of you guys. You caught me for a hot minute sitting still in Georgia before I turn around and end up in Orlando tomorrow. I can't wait to geek out, catch up, talk a little data with you guys.
Yeah, talk about history, talk about data. Josh Kanner. Man, it just feels like not so long ago we were on a live podcast at a big show.
Yeah, it feels like just yesterday, but they say the older you get, the faster the years go by, and they're whizzing by for me right now. I just had my birthday last week, so I'm feeling it, guys. I'm feeling the age.
Man, we're right in the middle. Mine's in like a week. Yours was a week ago. But hey, listen, you also proved yourself to me. I have this little thing in the ski resort business where I came from. If you can chase powder, you kind of go up a few notches. And a little hint, Josh came out and he's a little bit of a powder hound, man. You didn't have any trouble getting it done on the slopes.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it was great to ski with you and ski with your dad, who gave me a lot of hope. Speaking of age, still out there at, what is he, 73?
75, like yeah.
75 now, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with that Beaver Creek over your right shoulder there that put the thought in my head that maybe I should try and look you up.
Yeah, man. I'm glad you did. We got to ski, which was a lot of fun. I forgot. Yeah, my dad was out with us. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, listen, tune in, guys, because you're going to want to hear this from Josh. We got a long story to tell, but remember, before we get into it, check us out on youtube.com/@thecontechcrew. Follow those shorts, like them, share them with your friends. Follow us on LinkedIn, follow all the hosts, follow our guests. That's how we get the word out. Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more. All right. So Josh, OG, this is, you've lived a few lives in the Contech world. Give people who don't know your history a little bit of background and how you got where you are today.
Yeah, appreciate it. The story started actually back in 2005. So this is the 20th year for me in the Contech industry. Adam Omansky and I started a company called Vela Systems, which had this crazy thought that we should bring mobility to the field in construction. We started by creating a tablet PC-based application, which is always, when I speak publicly, a good way to see how old the audience is, because you can do a quick show of hands and I ask, who remembers tablet PCs? And it's really that demo is skewing real old now, which is kind of funny. Jeff and Rob, I know you guys would raise your hand, so I won't ask you guys.
Yeah. So if you're looking on YouTube, we're raising our hands over here. That's still the case.
Yeah, yeah. So we built punchless software, or the ability to look at 2D and eventually even 3D plans and drawings, commissioning, safety, checklisting, a whole bunch of what we wound up calling field management. To make a super long story short, we grew that company over 7 years and wound up exiting to Autodesk and became BIM 360 Field, which started Autodesk in the whole set of products that have now become Autodesk Construction Cloud. Yeah, I left there and started the next thing, which was called SmartVid to start. And then we rebranded as NewMetrics. The concept was, hey, we'd been working for, at that point, about 10 years as an industry, to the theme of this whole podcast, actually, Jeff, to take data from the field where it had been traditionally locked in paper field notebooks or maybe Excel. Maybe it was stuck on, remember back, digital cameras that had those SD cards, maybe, you know, people were taking progress photos and punch list photos and all kinds of stuff. And could we, now that we had field management software and we're actually tapping into what was going on on the ground, at the work face? Could we actually start using some of that data to better improve project delivery? And could we, hey, there's this new thing, and it's crazy to say given how popular it is now, but even 8 years ago, 9 years ago, we had AI. We had computer vision AI, we had speech AI, and we thought, whoa, maybe we can take this massive amount of data we're creating and we can apply AI to it, even 8, 9 years ago, and use it to try and solve one of our industry's most stubborn problems, which unfortunately continues to be safety. So we built a whole safety application, used AI, computer vision, speech, and then ultimately predictive AI. And we were starting to do some stuff around generative AI and how that could work. And we got acquired by Oracle about 2.5 years ago. And they brought us in as a team and brought me in to manage AI and analytics for Oracle's construction and engineering industries group, which is my current role. I work with the Oracle product strategy and product management leads for such products as Primavera for scheduling, so P6 and Oracle Primavera Cloud, for Unifier, which is the owner cost control and program management product, for Textura on payment side, Aconex, which is our document control and engineering and specification and project collaboration tool. And then a product that I run product management for, and you guys know me, Niv, well, you know, what gets me up in the morning is the opportunity to work with leaders in our industry to build product, to change the way we, you know, we work. So I have the honor, the pleasure of running a product line called the Construction Intelligence Cloud, which is really the extension of what we started, you know, 9, 10 years ago. It's at its core, it's all about how do we use data to improve outcomes in our industry. We started with safety because that's where we were in NewMetrics. And now we're knocking down the other pillars of risk, delivery risk, schedule, cost, quality, and another one we call collaboration. So that's our goal with that product, is to use all the data we got, ever increasing amounts of data. How do we use it to better deliver projects and overall programs? Because this is about contractors, but it's also about owners who are really, as you all know, as we all know, they're a really big, important part of the puzzle. So yeah, that's my long answer. Happy to be here and talking to you guys again.
Hey, before we go too far, we got to pay homage to Vinny. Some people listening right now may not know who Vinny is, but I remember when you challenged us back in the day to check out Vinny. And honestly, man, I still show videos of Vinny. I did just last week. I was planning to do this week. It's amazing. You're saying 8 years ago.
Yeah.
How's Vinny doing these days?
Yeah, Vinny's alive and well. So yeah, for folks who don't remember, there was a whole time period, you know, we have ChatGPT now. It doesn't really have a name, but back in the original days of AI, right, there was, remember, Amazon had Alexa, and like it was very popular to name your AI. So we named ours Vinny. It was actually named after a field superintendent in Jersey. No surprise. He's Vinny. Vincent in more formal situations. But yeah, so Vinny, he was a field superintendent who had a photographic memory for job site progress photos. And they, on this particular job, there was a claim. Vinny remembered that they had in-wall photos of the area at under dispute. He was able to go on his laptop, find the images, find what he needed to find, and they were able to get out of, or let's put it this way, they were able to provide evidence to dispel the $4 million claim. So we decided to name our visual AI after Vinny and trained Vinny on what wound up being over 100 different, think of it as construction visual indicators, everything from what phase of work are you in to what equipment's on site to things like, are workers at height? Are workers tied off? Do you have visible exposed holes? A really important one was housekeeping, you know, is there visible debris mess on the job? And all those wound up being things that we can and still can look for automatically in the progress photos coming from your job. When NewMetrics got acquired and brought into Oracle, one of the things that Oracle does with acquisitions is integrate them into Oracle's overall strategy, which I know we're going to get to later. the strategy is that you use Oracle tech to deliver Oracle industry products. And it's work to do, but once you get on top of the Oracle Red Stack, as it's called, which starts with Oracle Cloud and goes all the way up, you get a lot of benefits, including a whole bunch of AI and all the AI investments that Oracle's making. So Vinny is alive and well. He just has a new home. He's now running in Oracle Cloud infrastructure. The models we built are actually all up and running and available for use.
That's a crazy story, because connecting it back, it connects two things that I've noticed from you over time that I think you notice in the successful folks building in the industry that continue to be successful. It was the problem. The problem was that if you didn't have that person, Vinny, remembering that photo, you couldn't prove the conditions that you had. And how much is lost in proving something instead of just solving it with the data that shows that it was done. And, you know, you go all the way back to Vela. It was, hey, we need to capture and bring this technology to the field, not only so we can help them, but also so that we can fuel the other side of what we're doing, right? Create this data flow. You did it there. You did it at SmartVid and then NewMetrics when it grew. You started with these problems. But what I've always thought is really cool with your mind, Josh, is you start with these problems and then you're like, ooh, cool, we got stuff. All right, we solved the problem. Like, hey, you take NewMetrics, boom, solve the problem. What else can we do with it? I think there's more. And so this is where adding it on to, and I like that you described how Oracle brings things in, because there is this sort of a black box to people when companies are acquired. And in fact, I mean, you'll hear on the circuit, like, acquisition is bad. Oh, I should talk to my startups and find out if acquisition is their goal. It's not a bad thing. There's only like 10%, maybe less, that IPO in the end. In construction tech, that's not 10%. It's way less than that, that actually IPO. So as successful, you got the two successes are, well, you continue on and you're a small thing. You fail, which is a true option, or you become a part of something else. And there's some black boxness to that. And I like that, you know, you're kind of describing that Vinny's got a new home. Vinny's got new friends, though. So that's where I want to take it, is like, he got new friends and you got new insights. So talk about where now, because those were startup ventures, right? And you had time in your acquisition time to go through and be a part of the big corporate world and then go back to doing it again. Now you're in that big corporate world. What's different this time? What's exciting you about this time with the Construction Intelligence Cloud? Because, I mean, you can break down a little bit more about what that actually means.
I'm happy to. And it really is. It's an exciting time to be working in the area of data. And I know we're not, shouldn't say it too much because it turns people off, but data and AI, and man, what company would you want to be? If you're interested in those two things and you're interested in unlocking the power of data to help our industry, who wouldn't want to work at Oracle, which at its core is fundamentally, we're a data and analytics company that is now winning the AI game at the core level of infrastructure. So if you look at what AI is delivered on, if you think about other what's called hyperscalers, so these are other hosting providers, right? Like Amazon or Google or even Microsoft, all of whom, by the way, are Oracle partners. We compete at this basic technology level, the hyperscaler market, which is delivering AI services, GPUs, GPU-based compute, and building services on top of it. I'm not saying this is causation at all, but we got acquired 2.5 years ago. Oracle stock was at around $70. It peaked at 195. You know, I've been here 2.5 years. It's not causation. I'm just pointing out some facts, Jeff and Rob. Okay. Kidding aside.
I love it.
Kidding aside,
it wasn't you, it was Vinny, right? It was Vinny. It was Vinny.
Totally Vinny. I would not take any credit at all. You know, kidding aside, Oracle as a business, you know, we're a really big company. We're over 150,000 employees, over $50 billion a year in annual revenue, and a big chunk of that comes from, I keep doing this because it's this base layer, what we call our hyperscaling layer, it's called OCI, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. So most folks have heard of AWS, Amazon Web Services. You might have heard of Azure, Microsoft. Oracle has a competitive product there called OCI that has been doing extremely well in the market. And if you listen to any of the Oracle earnings calls, this is all public information. We've been scaling, taking share from those other hyperscalers because we're good at AI. We're able to deliver it at a better price point. We actually have a more advanced network infrastructure. And the whole company is built on that foundation of hardcore analytics and AI tech. So to your question, kind of your point, it's a really exciting time to be in the group we're in, which is construction and engineering as a vertical. Because we, now that we are on the Red Stack, including OCI, we get the benefits of the massive investments that Oracle is making in that tech. And they are used to help deliver solutions, products around both descriptive and predictive analytics for construction and engineering. So you can think of it as going from being anyone at a startup, I mean, you know, you're resource constrained, right? Now, here at Oracle, we still have budgets. I mean, it's not like we're spending, you know, like crazy, but as opposed to every dollar in my budget needing to go for all of the tech, I get to benefit from Oracle's big red stack and all of the, you know, the billions. We can get back to this later. I was in Saudi Arabia last week with Oracle. We announced the week before when Trump was in town, we announced a $14 billion investment in Saudi Arabia. That's just one of like 10 of those kinds of announcements. We announced, I think it was like $8 billion into Japan and $6 billion into, you know, Europe. And, you know, as my grandmother would say, $8 billion here, $6 billion here, you're pretty soon you're talking real money. So there's massive... She never said that, by the way. She said something similar. But anyway, so there's basically this big platform, tech platform we get to build on top of. And it's a key part of Oracle's strategy to have these industry groups like us in construction and engineering. We have colleagues in manufacturing and health, and very public Oracle is in the whole world of health and healthcare, hospitality, food and beverage. A whole bunch of different industries that are all built on top of that.
Josh, let me ask you a question. You're talking about the numbers to kind of hone this in a little bit. The tech that you created with Vinny, or should I refer to him now formally as Vincent, since he's kind of upgraded, right?
He's been upgraded. You could call him Vincent. Yeah.
Let's talk about what Vincent's done the last couple of years. Do you have any numbers that you can share that are kind of tangible to say, all right, why would you take all these photos and push them into a cloud to improve safety? What does that do for companies? Does it reduce incident rates? Does it reduce mod rates? What's that look like?
Yeah. So if you look at applying AI and a more analytical view to safety, you have to combine that with, and Rob is a safety professional and technology advocate, you know this very well. You have to combine the tech with organizational processes, right? Like tech on its own doesn't do anything. You really need, you know, we talk a lot in our industry about safety culture. That's a representation of what people are doing in the field. So it's only when you have organizational commitment around how you can use that data and how it ties together. So tech and the way you run your jobs, the way you have a safety culture, you can really unlock massive, massive improvements because you've got more data to work with. You've got more signal, you know, to be able to guide your ship, drive your project. So yeah, we've had really fortunate to work with great customers like the Bolt Company out of Wisconsin, with Suffolk Construction based here in Boston where I am and all over the country. Owners like one of the largest water utilities in the UK, Severn Trent. All three of those, if you're watching this podcast, you can just Google Severn Trent Oracle webinar or Bolt or Suffolk Oracle webinar, and it'll pop up. There's public webinars there with some of the numbers that I'm about to mention. Bolt, for example, in their first year of using a more data-driven and observation-based safety program, they cut their incident rate by 10%, but they cut their incident severity significantly. So their overall workers' compensation cost dropped 75% in the first 12 months. And that's a number that actually they didn't give to us. They gave that to a Dodge Smart Market report, where they reported to Dodge the results of the again, combination of two things. It's observation-based safety and a more data-driven, both benchmarking and predictive-based approach. Suffolk is on record, similar kind of thing. Their TRIR, total recordable incident rate, dropped 57% in the first year. They estimated multiple millions of dollars of avoided incidents, which had come up from the predictive analytics. And Severin Trent reduced the cycle time for them as an owner to be working with what they call their one supply chain partners. It's eight or nine now. It's actually nine now of the larger contractors in the UK that are providing a multi-billion dollar Great British Pound overall capital program, reducing their cycle time for better safety results by a day a week. So they're getting better insights sooner and standardizing the data across their whole supply chain. So those are some numbers for you, Rob, and those are all public here at Oracle. I want to make sure I only talk about public things. I'm not in a startup anymore, so
we can't get him to we can't sucker him into telling us things he's not supposed to anymore. But no, you know, we got older, we got grayer, we got more together. But I like this because you hinted on something, and it's what Rob talks about a lot. And you put it in, it's signaling, right? And so how does this safety thing and signaling connect to other parts of the business? We focus on safety, right? Because it's critical. We need, so many people don't go home safely every day. And like at the core, we care about that. But you can take the philosophy of signaling with safety and apply that to other parts of your business. And I'm interested how that connects and what some people might be thinking about, because you guys are, you know, moving down the realm of, you said it, schedule, cost, quality. What are other signaling that you can get as an organization in construction that, you know, they might want to pay attention to?
Yeah, I think that's part of the really interesting challenge, the data challenge that we have, is that there's, how do you get the signal from the noise? How do you know what has value in terms of better both rearward looking, you know, descriptive analytics, as well as forward looking predictive analytics? And by the way, as an aside, both you guys are super close to this, you know, on the operationalizing these insights is a whole nother challenge, right? How do you change the hearts and minds of operations and convince seasoned, you know, very hard to convince to do something a new way, construction professionals on both the contractor and owner side, how to, you know, trust this data, which is subject for, that could be a whole nother podcast. But yeah, Jeff, for us, that's the fun part, you know. So we see signal all over the place. We see signal, you know, Rob, we like to talk about photos, but photos are just one of the signals, right? The safety models we've built look at things like they look at your payroll data, if you'll give it to it. And they look at, you know, what, this is just one example. What's the ratio of foreman to labor hours on the job site? And that's one example of a kind of metric that if all you're doing is you're a safety guy, if all you're looking at your safety data and you don't have access to that data, which, you know, 90%, 95% of safety teams don't look at payroll data. It's a different silo. They just don't get access to it. We combine all of those different sources of signal together. We wound up building in the safety area alone, Jeff, we built like 150 different combinations like that, that take data from payroll. They take data from your daily report. They take the weather. They take your schedule activities. They combine it all. And then we figure out which of those have the most value in terms of giving an operations professional, whether it's a manager, a regional safety manager, or like most importantly, the project team themselves, give them a heads up about what to look out for. And then they can do something about it before it happens.
Before it happens. That's the critical component, is to raise that signal. And that signal could be, you know, schedule. Like, hey, we're seeing a decreased or an increased man hour, but we're not seeing an increase in percent complete. That indicates to us a couple of things, right? One can be safety, but that's not the only thing in our business. The other could be, right, we're headed for trade stacking. We're headed for falling behind and cost increases. And it's just amazing the number of different signals that you can get. And I imagine there's a learning that Oracle's gotten across all of its families of companies, because, you know, you're one of the few that I like to call out that you're in every industry I can think of mostly. You know, there's, I'm sure there's a few. Somebody at Oracle can tell me what you're not in, but most of them you're in. But unlike some of the other hyperscalers and bigger companies, they don't have a whole group that's focused on construction and that has true experience, not only in the field and in building and in designing the solutions, but, you know, real hard knocks in what it takes to build projects.
Yeah, you just summarized Oracle's industry strategy in a really great way, Jeff. And that's been also one of the super positive things about coming onto the team here. I've been here, as I mentioned, 2.5 years, and I look around and it's a lot of the core crew from Primavera. You know, I mean, they're people from Conshohocken in Pennsylvania, you know, who were with Primavera early days. The Textura team, still a lot of the same crew. So there's a lot of industry knowledge within the walls of Oracle. And you see that in the other industries as well. You see it in food and beverage. We were joking about before we started recording, you know, you look around and if the next time anybody's at a Waffle House, check out the point of sale device. It's an Oracle point of sale device. If you're at a Starbucks, most places, or a Marriott hotel, you'll see Oracle software there. We're big in the banking world, in the manufacturing world. So what that is all a representation of is what we call our industry strategy, which Larry Ellison, the founder of Oracle, who still works, you know, at 80 years old. And if you're interested, there's actually a pretty neat commencement address at USC a few years ago. He kind of described, you know, why he's 80 years old. He's got more money than he can spend, why he still works. It's about passion, you know, for changing industry and changing the world, really. The key point here is that there Oracle strategy is from Larry has always been since the 1980s and 90s, what he calls, we eat our own dog food. Now, you're not supposed to say that at Oracle anymore. So I am, for the record, not using that phrase. I am just referring to the fact that Larry uses it. And he actually used it in an earnings call recently, which I thought was hysterical. But it's what it does is it creates, to your point, Jeff, it really shortens the flywheel between us as Oracle, the technology provider. You know, we invented the relational database, or some would say we were the first ones to at least commercially deliver one, even if we didn't invent it. And then, so that's our roots, but we have industry specific tech like construction and engineering, and not just any, we have the leading products in our industry sitting on top of that technology stack with our other industry groups all pushing that tech stack to be the best it possibly can be. And that's a really good flywheel to be in.
Yeah, it's a real different type of setup than some of the others in the world are. And that's the uniqueness. That's what I love about it. And I love where you're pushing those boundaries, but also learning from those other industries. I came from outside of the industry and I've preached that from the beginning because, you know, I mean, I use the restaurant analogy all the time and, you know, we could learn how to prefabricate from the speed in which, you know, you order your food at a fine dine restaurant. And it's not a mistake that each course comes out exactly hot, exactly when it's supposed to, exactly from a line that's basically prefabricated. So if there's insights there, there's insights in the data, there's insights in the knowledge. And so putting it on top of a layer is just a really cool idea. Rob, I'm sure, you know, I'm going to hog him if you're not careful. So I'm sure you got some questions for Josh.
Man, there's so many questions to begin to try and wrap around this. When you're talking about those signals, that's something I've kind of been hearing as I've traveled around the past few months and all these conferences. People are not sure what signals to pick up on. So the way you're talking about the dashboard of sorts that I think you're hinting at, that is an interesting way to think about. Where is my next safety incident coming from? Because it may not be from the work itself. It could be because, well, Jeff talked about it, trade stacking. Do you have any examples of some of the customers that you're working with now that really talk to you about these signals that they're picking up on, that they're seeing things that they previously would not have prior?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the beautiful things about AI is that it can look at more things than any human ever could. Good. So it can be looking at 50 things on a Sunday and tell you which 6 you should worry about. You know, a great example is weather, right? So you may have weather forecasts across 40 jobs. That's a lot to look at. But if you have an AI that's including the weather as one of the things to evaluate when looking at the risk of the various jobs, and you've got high heat warnings for a particular job set or a high wind alert, that can all be in the readout that happens Monday morning for your 1 week. You're planning the next week and where you want to focus your attention. It should be stuff that makes sense, I think, is a key point, Rob. And by that, I mean, we shouldn't be coming up with features or signals or things that when safety professional or a scheduler, a head of project controls, when they look at it, they should be like, they should not say, what the heck is that? I don't know what the heck that is, right? Like with a standard. And sometimes in data science, you'll get things that pop out like, well, you know, your rate of schedule updating is too low. Like, what the hell does that mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with risk, but it's nothing that I can really control. Or, you know, a classic one in the safety world is you could tell people their project is too big. It's like, what the F? I can't make my project smaller. You know, like, of course, every hour worked is like a lottery ticket for an incident, right? But I can't control that. I'm going to be working. So tell me something I don't know, AI. And that, I think, is where you get into the, you know, both the power and some of the magic of what we're doing, Rob, is that we tell them, we are able to feedback like, hey, maybe you could adjust your crew mix, or maybe you should look at where you're stacking those activities. And we have found that there's a magic number based on the type of construction for how many activities you can stack. And then you hit a threshold and then the risk starts spiking off the charts. So there's a bunch of those. And for us, that's the beautiful moment where you see the light bulb go off and the data, back to my two hands, the data connects to your operations. Because if you're not using the predictions, if you're not actually changing the way you work, then who cares, frankly? You know, it's just a pretty chart. And the key is that those insights not only have to be right, but they also have to be stuff that is actionable and that makes sense to an operations professional. Otherwise, again, no one's going to do it. No one's going to use it. Then who cares?
Ooh, now you mentioned something that just triggered a thought. You know, I was talking about the video that I show of Vinny and the glove report from back in the day. And someone had asked me a couple weeks back, I'm like, okay, great. So you find these 15 hazards of somebody not wearing a vest or gloves or glasses. Great. Now what do you do? But you said the two words. Actionable items, because all right, someone's not wearing that hard hat and maybe it took you an hour to get to them, but maybe you do get to them to say put it on. And not even a hard hat, now it's actually a type 2 helmet and they're working up on a construction deck that they're moving around rebar and other giant objects that if they hit you in the head probably don't turn out too good.
PPE people like to throw stones at it, right? Like, that's an easy observation to make. You know, when you put in place an observation-based program and you start driving towards targets for numbers of observations, you typically will see a lot of PPE-based observations because they're easy to do. And there's some merit to that. You know, like when you're creating an observation-based program, you don't want people just going around looking for hard hats or looking for gloves. You want them to understand the work. And fundamentally, it's about engaging. As the head of safety for Bolt, Scott Frazier, says in the webinar, you know, every observation should be a conversation. It's about engagement. It's actually a way of measuring your safety culture, frankly, which a lot of times people say, you can't measure culture. Well, you can, because you can measure engagement. And that's what the observations are about. But that said, there's signal in PPE. If your job, we've seen it, we've proven it across 25 centuries, 2,500 years of outcome data, which is what we've analyzed, and it's growing. If your PPE compliance isn't good, it's like kind of like the old adage, if your safe job is a clean job and a clean job is a safe job, which I've heard superintendents say, like it's an indicator, you know, so you can throw stones and, you know, there is reasons to throw stones at simply PPE based, you know, measurement, but it is, it correlates strongly with your overall safety approach on a job, and jobs that don't do well at PPE compliance are on average not as safe for other things, not just PPE. It relates to your culture. So That's a bit of a rant there, but because I've seen it. I know people sometimes, like in our industry, people like to like poke holes and stuff and be like, ah, it's not really, but you're missing the bigger picture, which is, yeah, okay, so what? The guys aren't wearing gloves. They, you know, you have 100% glove compliance policy, and maybe, you know, they're doing some work and they're doing interiors and they took their gloves off. Like, but you have 100% glove compliance policy. There's all, like, it might be representative of some other stuff going on.
Yeah. It might be just a basic of a signal. And that's where you want to take that part, and you want to take schedule and where you are. And you want to take a bunch of the other quality, you know, you want to take all of that into account to say, okay, I have too big of a job. Great. Like you said, tell me something I need to know. Well, I can tell you that when you have this large of a job and this many people being deployed to the job, here's some of the risks and things you need to be concerned with, like access. Hey, you want everybody standing at the lift every morning and not getting to the job? People are expensive. Materials and material movement. Hey, this is what we need. Hey, this is how you can take this entire cake and break it down into pieces. And there's just one of those signals ahead. And this is where I want to flip you, because I want to take you here to end us out with it, is something unique about what you said before was Bolton Suffolk, awesome construction companies. But you talked about that water utility, the owner. I am seeing more and more the owner and what the owner cares about driving what we do. It drove us in safety, and it's got to drive us beyond that now. And I'm wondering what you're hearing from those owners that they want to see, not just out of our solutions, right? A lot of the solutions exist today. They're just not used. Like, not used in the way that's actionable, right? I might be putting my daily reports in. I might be putting the updates in. I might be doing all the things, but I'm just doing them. What are owners caring about, and what can contractors learn from that right now that you're seeing to use this intelligence to go forward?
It's been really interesting being now inside of Oracle and really traveling all over the world, meeting with large owners, large contractors. A lot of our business is with the owner market. As I mentioned before, I was just in Saudi Arabia for the first time with Oracle. Our customers in Saudi include some of the biggest owner-driven projects in the world. What I can say is that having worked with large owners here in the States and some others internationally, you're starting to see this paradigm, particularly when large projects are involved, that you've seen more on the EPC side for many years, which is an owner getting very involved in, you know, what you might call the means and methods or the delivery mechanisms of the actual work, because they understand what's at stake and they're going to be taking the asset and running it. So they care a lot about how it's delivered. They care a lot about the data that they're getting as a part of that handover package. And what you see, and you see in the States, and you definitely see around the world, is they staff up with a whole cohort, you know, a whole group of PMs and construction managers internally that come from the industry, typically come from the contractor side and are helping to deliver the work, or, you know, owner's rep side. So there, that when I first started in construction tech, you know, 2 decades ago, there was this line around where the owner, particularly on the commercial construction side, where the owner stopped and the contractor started. And it was all about, the owner didn't want to specify too much, because then the contractor could come back and actually say, hey, listen, I think the legal term was detrimental reliance. You forced me to use this technology, and therefore, if it breaks or whatever, the owner is on the hook for it. I'm seeing that line move, and it's moved. If you look historically, you know, Autodesk and Revit getting that spec'd in at Oracle, Primavera and P6, like, it's hard to find an owner that doesn't specify P6 as the way you deliver a project. You see it also with Unifier. You see it on the contractor side, Textura as a payments platform. That line is definitely moving, and it has to do with owners, I think, really understanding the gravity, the magnitude, and the importance of the technology stack. not just from a delivery standpoint, but also back to the theme of this webinar or this podcast, rather, like it's about the data and they need and want the data in a particular way. All the examples I just gave have to do not just with execution, but also with the data as an asset for ongoing operations of the build once it's handed over, but even earlier for managing the massive program that the owners are managing to deliver their work.
Yeah, that's, you nailed it. It's that programmatic aspect. And I forgot about the whole lines before and the detrimental reliance and those things. I feel like that's become historical in some respects because the tools are ubiquitous now and required. And like you said, we have so many advanced owners that programmatically are running so much work and are there. And we forget about this. Their other businesses are focused on using the asset, not building the asset, right? But they're so concerned that they've brought construction professionals out of the industry and into their side to make sure it's moving in a fashion that works means and methods. It works from a tech stack. And then it also works, you know, across the chain that they can hand it to facilities and know, I'm not just specking what I need. I know I can use what I'm asking for. So give it to me. And man, that's the meat and potatoes of the future of this world that I'm really, really excited to see players like you in.
Yeah. And I think candidly, man, I think if you look around, I don't think the contracting community has done itself a big favor by taking what owners have historically tried to specify as data-oriented contractual requirements and, you know, kind of skirting the like going to the letter of the contract, but not actually delivering anything useful. I'll never forget the owner for UMass's hospital group. They presented at one of our user conferences and I'll never forget. He was on stage. He said, I specified, you know, a data driven deliverable for during construction and then for operations. I went from getting a giant, you know, file box full of useless paper folders to getting a smaller cardboard box full of useless CD-ROMs. And so I think that dynamic as well, Jeff, has pushed owners, forced them actually to get into the business, frankly, of how they want to be getting stuff. Because no matter how you spec it, like it's really hard. It's hard to get what you need unless you actually say what the actual format is. Now, IFCs aside and BIM and, you know, that's another, we could do a whole nother podcast on that one. You know, our industry still has challenges figuring out what to call stuff. And I think that what you're seeing on the owner side is a reaction to that as well.
I think it was I think it's an interesting time because the owners are more sophisticated and I will say the contractors were far behind, but are quickly advancing to the point where now what I think is interesting is what you said is it's not that it's being specced in. It's that, what is that signal? What do you do to operationalize that? I think right now we're seeing trades, GCs and owners finally start to sit down and be sophisticated enough to say, these are the things that we need. And it's usually data, right? Far be it from me to say it's where it is exactly, but it's really that we're sophisticated enough to stop saying, you have to spec and use my system. These are the data points that I require to operate, get them to me. And they didn't trust that before. So they said, okay, you're going to use my thing. Now we're at that point, and I think that the switch is going to flip when we can truly feel free to move about the project and share the data. And we give that information that fulfills those needs while actually driving signaling on our own sides and in our own businesses to really make a difference in our operational efficiencies and excellence. And that's that whole operational excellence, like reaching its true pivot. And man, I could go on with you for hours. And I think we're going to have to, like, Rob, I think we're signaling at a round two, maybe partially at a Waffle House, partially at an Opry Ski. I don't know. maybe I'm hoping for too much in the future.
No, we just need to will it into existence, Jeff, and we'll make it happen. We just let's be persistent and we can definitely make it happen.
Industry summits in really cool places, I think, is a cool thing.
From Waffle House to Beaver Creek. You know, that's, I think,
There you go. I'll be the first Waffle House owner in Beaver Creek.
Nice.
Maybe not. Hey, so, Rob, yeah. Man, has this been fun or what?
It's always fun to catch up with you, to catch up with Josh, you know, to geek out, talk a little data, talk a little safety, and just share some ideas. And if we spark anyone today to go, hey, wait a minute, what if? That's the idea.
Josh, you're all over the place. Where can people go find out a little bit more, learn a little bit more about this secret construction sauce going on in the Oracle world?
Yeah, if you just Google Construction Intelligence Cloud Oracle, or you'll come to the webpage. And yeah, I'm out at various things. Look me up on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to connect with other contact folks. 25 years in software. I have a reunion coming up this weekend, 25 years since I came out of grad school. And so it's top of mind for me. 25 years in software, 22 and a half of them in startups. So, you know, I'm definitely got a soft spot for helping other folks get off the ground, and, you know, happy to be helpful wherever I can. And from my seat here at Oracle, I sit across AI and analytics across our construction portfolio, and would love to chat with folks, owners and contractors who are interested in pursuing how AI can change safety, schedule, cost, quality, and more, because we're building out the signals that drive predictions in those areas, and we're knocking them down.
That's awesome, man. It's been fun to ride along with you for part of it, at least. And I look forward to continuing to ride along with you into the future.
Here, here.
Thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Josh Canner. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is The Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.